The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know, they always talk about, are you a plotter or a pantser? And I would say it's a combination of both, because I do want to have the big goalposts in mind, you know, have a beginning, a middle, and end before you start, but, you know, not with all the details, and things obviously change. So I had mentioned this audio series that I'm working on, and I did the same thing. I did an outline of all the episodes, and I thought I knew how it was going to end, and I wrote that down. But then when you're actually writing, different ideas come through. And then it wasn't till I was writing the last episode that I decided, this is the ending, you know, because you've been working on this for a while now, and you get different ideas. And I passed it by the producer, and she thought it was much better than what I had originally.
And welcome back to The Writer Files. I am your grateful host, Kelton Reed, wishing you pages, patience, and perseverance per usual. Oscar-nominated screenwriter-turned-novelist Iris Yamashita returned to chat with me about the difference between writing for the ear and the screen, using plotting and pantsing, and her anticipated follow-up thriller, Village in the Dark. Iris has been working in Hollywood for over 15 years and was nominated for a Best Original Screenplay Oscar for the movie Letters to Iwo Jima, directed by Clint Eastwood. The sequel to her debut novel, City Under One Roof, is Village in the Dark, described as a riveting mystery perfect for fans of Twin Peaks, Mayor of Easttown, and True Detective. An Amazon editor's pick for Best Mystery Thriller and Suspense, Kirkus Reviews called the book a sharp and gritty mystery with a compelling socio-political undercurrent. Iris continues to work in Hollywood, developing for both film and streaming media, and she has taught screenwriting at UCLA and AFI. In this file, Iris and I discussed why you need to have a beginning, middle, and end no matter what you're writing, what it's like to be both the writer and director as a novelist, how to write for audio drama, why filmmakers don't like to read, learning the rules so you can break them, how to keep your dreams alive, and a lot more. Stay calm and write on. And don't forget, you can always support this show by heading to writerfiles.fm, where you can also sign up for email updates and other resources for writers. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click follow to automatically see new interviews in your podcatcher as soon as they're published, and drop us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to help other writers find us. Yes, we are back on The Writer Files. I am honored today to be joined by a returned guest. We have our friend, Oscar-nominated scribe and novelist, Iris Yamashita, is hanging out with us today. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be back.
Yeah, this is cool because I love chatting with authors about craft and their latest projects. And of course, we get another chance to pick your brain about all things screenwriting and fiction. But yeah, let's wind the clock back a little bit and just talk about kind of where you've been, because I think we talked almost exactly 1 year ago today about the City Under One Roof. And now we're back with a sequel, which is really cool to see. But yeah, tell us a little bit about kind of what you've been up to the last year.
Yes. So City Under One Roof came out January last year. So yes, it's been almost exactly a year and a month. And Village in the Dark came out in February. So very excited. That's pretty much mainly what I've been working on for the past year. But I've also been working on a audio series, which I'm almost done writing, which will be coming out later this year.
Amazing. I can't wait to talk about that too. That must be fun. And of course, that's a little bit different, but more similar to the screenwriting stuff, right?
Yes, it is. You know, working in different media has been very exciting. Each one has its challenges, its differences, but it's kind of fun to you know, go from heavy description and then audio is heavy dialogue and not a lot of description. So it's kind of interesting to try to work those different muscles.
Interesting. Yeah, I want to talk about that. Very cool. So let's talk about the latest. And how are you feeling now that it's your sequel is out in the world? What's the vibe over there? Are you feeling pretty confident? Are you kind of doing some touring stuff, obviously some promotional things? And how are you feeling?
Yeah, the publicity end of this is something, you know, I'm not used to, because in screenwriting, you know, usually everybody wants to talk to the director and the actors, and not as much to the writer. But the on the novel, obviously you're it. And so yeah, it's not something that I was used to, but I'm starting to get a better understanding of. And you know, the social media aspect also is something I wasn't used to, and trying to get caught up on all the social media platforms and what you need to be doing, which is, it seems like it's a full-time job in itself. So I don't know how a lot of writers do, you know, podcasting like you do. And it seems like, wow, you have another full-time job practically.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you raise that point, because, you know, as we've noted so many times before, even as you get bigger and more well known as an author, as a fictionist, as a novelist, as you said, you are the writer and the director, and you're wearing all these hats because you're also your best PR person, right? Unless you're at the stage in your career where you're hiring like an assistant to do that kind of thing. It's really interesting that you've got to wear these different hats.
Yeah, yeah, I had to brush up some of my Adobe skills.
Oh, wow.
but it's fun. It's great to be able to interact, you know, with readers and things. That's been very rewarding.
Yeah, yeah, I bet. Well, that's cool. And of course, you know, congrats on the reception of the latest, called One Hell of a Follow-Up to your debut, among other things, a highly atmospheric suspense thriller. I thought it was cool that Kirkus had noted that it was a sharp, gritty mystery with a compelling socio-political undercurrent. Of course, that's what some of our best fiction does, is kind of taps the vein. But yeah, since City Under One Roof, now with Village in the Dark as its kind of follow-up, yeah, I mean, I'd love to talk about where it goes next, but also kind of some of the inspiration that went into the latest.
Yes. So City Under One Roof, as you mentioned, it was the first book in the series. And it takes place in a very isolated city in Alaska, where all 200 and some residents live in a single high-rise building. And the only way to get there is through this single-lane tunnel. And so it's very isolated. It was originally built as a military outpost. And so I have the protagonist, who is an outsider. She comes from Anchorage, who gets kind of trapped into this world. And she solves a crime in the first book, but she doesn't think it's related at all to her family, which is her husband and her son went missing when they went hiking. And so she believed that they had perished in a hiking accident. But in the second book, it starts with her. She's gotten a clue that maybe there was some foul play involved. So it begins with her exhuming their bodies and getting them autopsied. And so the second book is all, it's more personal. It's about her family and finding answers to what happened to them.
Yeah. And of course, raising the question of, will there be a third?
I didn't originally intend to have a third book, but I'm not going to say that I won't be writing a third book. But the idea that I have for my next mystery is in a completely different world with different protagonists and characters. But I mean, it's not to say that I won't come back and revisit this world, because I've heard so many people giving me suggestions, you know, what about you could do this for the third book? And I'm like, so maybe.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And of course, look forward to whatever comes next for you. And again, congrats on the latest Village in the Dark, which of course we'll link to and your home base there. And we'll connect with you on the socials as well. But yeah, I mean, I would love to talk a little bit about kind of how your process may have evolved, because, you know, I'll just remind you that the last time you came on, you know, we just got to talk about kind of the transition for you from movie world to, you know, kind of making this dream of becoming a novelist into a reality, and how you had originally written it as a TV pilot and then kind of transformed it into a novel, which is a really cool story. But yeah, talk a little bit about, you know, are you still, because you had mentioned something about vomit drafting, which I thought was really a funny way to put it. Of course, we all know kind of this, you know, when you get into a place where you're just kind of, you feel like the words are just coming fast and furious and the ideas, and obviously love to talk about kind of, yeah, how that process is working out for you now as you're looking to the third one.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty similar. I always like to just not edit on the first draft and just let the creative juices flow. But I do still like to outline a bit in the beginning. So, you know, they always talk about, are you a plotter or a pantser? And I would say it's a combination of both, because I do want to have the big goalposts in mind, you know, have a beginning, a middle, and end before you start, but, you know, not with all the details, and things obviously change. So I had mentioned this audio series that I'm working on, and I did the same thing. I did an outline of all the episodes, and I thought I knew how it was going to end, and I wrote that down. But then when you're actually writing, different ideas come through. And then it wasn't till I was writing the last episode that I decided, this is the ending, you know, because you've been working on this for a while now, and you get different ideas. And I passed it by the producer, and she thought it was much better than what I had originally. So yeah, so it's a little bit of both. You don't want to get stuck in kind of writer's block situation. So if you have somewhere to go that you've already, you know, you've outlined, and you can try that first, and then go back and change everything later. So that's why I call it the vomit draft.
Yeah, I like that idea of kind of it being iterative, but at the same time, you know, you're not being too rigid as a plotter. You're not, you know, you're not plotting out each minutia, if you will, throughout, but you're just kind of giving yourself that room to play and then change things if needed, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, usually when I do the novel and I'm outlining, it's not going to be more than maybe two sentences in a chapter. So it's definitely not rigid. But, you know, sometimes if you do have something more detailed already in your mind, you can write it down and you don't have to follow it though.
And of course, I wanted to talk to you because, you know, as you said, you've kind of shifted between these different medias, from screenwriting to novel and writing these very taut, like atmospheric, claustrophobic, locked room mysteries to now turning to audio dramas. And as you said, there's something very different about audio, right? Because, you know, you essentially, your characters, as you said, the dialogue piece is in a sense how you're setting the scene, less so in cinema, because obviously you're using the camera to show the scene. So talk a little bit about the difference and how you are shifting your mindset and how you're kind of, again, changing between the mediums and what that was like for you. Because is this the first audio drama you've written?
Yes, it's the first one. And yeah, a big change, because when you're writing screenplays, I taught screenwriting, and you always say show, don't tell. And you always kind of try to advise against a narrator, you know, a voiceover, because that it tends to take you out of the film or the visuals. But then now that I'm writing audio only, you can't show. You can mm-hmm. only tell. So I had to throw that out the window. And then the only way sometimes to set the scene is with a voiceover. So now I have a lot of, you know, narration and voiceover. It's counter to what I teach visually. So it's interesting. I did find it a little difficult, because I'm like, well, how are you going to know what's going on if all you can do is hear things? And so I have a lot of written in sound effects mm-hmm. to help set the scene, and voiceover. Yeah, voiceover. At first I thought I could probably work something out without doing a lot of voiceover. But once I start, I'm like, no, I have to do the voiceover.
Interesting. Yeah. So what is the difference in the plotting? Because going from, you know, you're writing a very specific. In a very specific genre in fiction, you know, in the crime and mystery, then are you sticking in that same kind of milieu? Or is this completely different kind of thing for you?
It is a historical, and it has to do with World War II. So they sought me out. Mm. So it just kind of landed on my lap, and this was during the writer's strike, so I wasn't allowed to write for screen anyway. And I thought, maybe I should try this. And I had been approached by someone else as well for an audio series, but that one I turned down. But then this one, it just because it's an interesting topic, which is about the 442nd, which is the only or the all Japanese American regiment that fought during World War II. So the topic really was something that I was interested in, and they're usually, this topic has been tried. They've tried to make this as a movie many, many times, I think. And I think because of the budget, it's historical. And then also because, you know, it would be an all or mostly Japanese American cast, that it's difficult to get made. But this one, they already had the budget for it. And, you know, they really want to make it. And so I thought, well, okay, I'll give it a go. And it's been greenlit. So hopefully it'll be out this, they're shooting for fall this year. So
cool.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Yeah. Do you have a working title you can share?
Yeah, we don't have a title yet. Right. I use a working title, but I'm not sure what it's going to be in the end. But
sure.
Yeah. But it is about the 442nd. And I think I'm focusing on the Lost Battalion, which is a big event in the history of the 442nd, if anybody knows.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. Some pretty serious historical fiction then, really. But it's not fictional. It's more research heavy.
No, it's fictional. The events are, nonfiction, but the, characters and, some of the things that I'm introducing are, I don't know if I would say it's sci-fi, but
that's fun.
A little bit of out of the box thinking, you know, because cool. When I pitched it, my idea, I was wondering, like, do you want to go really traditional or do you want to go out of the box? And they all wanted out of the box. So that's what I'm doing.
Very cool and very different. We've spoken with Aaron Tracy about some of his bigger budget audio dramas, and he really describes it as, you know, just TV for your ears.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, because he was a TV producer and TV writer, and it seemed like kind of a natural fit for him. Audible Originals.
Yeah, this one is for the BBC oh, cool. World. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, that's exciting, Iris. Congrats on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of wanted to get, I don't know, just pick your brain a little bit, because as you said, you have taught screenwriting, UCLA and AFI. And yeah. And of course, if you were to teach the audio drama, I'm sure it would be a completely different course outline. But yeah, talk a little, maybe give us kind of, I don't know, just like a mini seminar or like your opening salvo for that kind of screenwriting piece, because I'm always super, super excited to chat with educators about how they approach craft and how they kind of are transmitting, as it were, their expertise to students in a classroom where, you know, a lot of that learning curve does come from probably being on set or, you know, as you've said, like working with Clint Eastwood, which must have been like really, really intimidating right out of the gates, that you just like the what's the learning curve like? And then again, how do you kind of share that with your students?
Yes, there is a learning curve in every format and, you know, what you emphasize, as I said, like whether it's the dialogue or the narration. And I can always tell when people who started off as novel writers who, you know, wanted to learn screenwriting would have heavy description, which, you know, it's great for a novel, but not in a screenplay. Most people who read screenplays don't like to read in general. So they don't like to see, it's kind of dumb, but they don't like to see long blocks of, you know, black ink, because then that means, oh, I got to read a lot of stuff here. they like to see white pages. But I think the tenets of storytelling remain the same. So, you know, the three act structure is something I learned in screenwriting. And I think that really helped me when I went back to writing novels, to think in that way. You know, you have your beginning, your middle, and your end, and you want to have a climax, and you know, all the things that you learn in screenwriting, you can carry over. And, you know, people might think it's formulaic, but it works. So I always tell my students, yeah, you can change, you know, you don't have to make it formulaic, but learn what the formula is first and then change it, you know, because you usually talk in those terms. And I think learning about how to develop characters is the same also, like what is your character's arc? And so we always talk about that in screenwriting, but I think it's a good thing to learn about and use in other formats as well. Like you start off somewhere and your character ends up somewhere else at the end. Not just physically, but, you know, internally. So those kind of story tenets are useful, I would say, for all forms of writing. And I think even with books nowadays, just like film, people seem to have shorter attention spans. So they like, I've been learning that people seem to like shorter chapters. And, you know, that's something we teach in screenwriting that, you know, you don't want a scene to go on too long. Generally, you know, in screenwriting, you only have like 3 to 4 pages at most for a scene. And usually that's even too long. I'm sure with books, it's a lot freer. You can write really long chapters if you want. But it's interesting when I look at comments, how people say, oh, I love the short chapters. It makes it easier to read.
For sure. And, you know, I mean, you really are writing page turners. And there is something very gratifying about being able to just like churn through, a thriller, a mystery, a crime novel, and to be able to see the progress that you've made.
That's a good point. It may be particular to this genre of thriller mystery that you want it to move a little quicker. Obviously, if you're writing literary fiction, then you could spend a lot more time and let it breathe a lot more. But it seems like in this genre, people like quick.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, that's cool. And I love your take, your kind of mini seminar there. Because yeah, as you said, the formulas work and it's kind of like you have to learn the rules to be able to break them, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And that three act structure, once you learn it, is like, oh yeah, it's completely applicable to really any storytelling modus, which is cool. But yeah, great stuff. So interesting. I can't remember. Are you a voting member of the Academy?
No, I'm not. And people are always surprised about that. Of course, I can vote for the Writers Guild. But when I was a newbie when I got nominated. And I didn't know anything about the rules and what you're supposed to do. And I don't think my agent knew, because she said I was the first person she represented who had been nominated. And so we didn't know about the things that you're supposed to do, about like campaigning to be a member of the Academy, which I think they would grant if you were nominated for an award.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But since we didn't campaign, because you do have to get endorsements from other Academy writers. And I had no clue about any of that stuff. And then later I found out, that's what you're supposed to do. But by then it was too late. And then I did kind of ask later the Academy, is it okay if, you know, you're a past Academy nominee? And they kind of said no.
So interesting. Didn't know that.
Yeah. I didn't know all the rules. And it seemed like when I found out, it was a little too late.
Well, that is really interesting. So yeah, as it is Oscar season, and we have you on the line here, on the hook. Can you talk about some of your favorite films of late, or any nominees that you're kind of rooting for?
I really like Perfect Days, which is the foreign language foreign film nominee from Japan. Wim Wenders hit directed, and it's just such a beautiful, quiet but beautiful film. That is one that really stood out for me. I did like the popular ones like Barbie and Oppenheimer, and I'm sure Oppenheimer's gonna take away a lot of awards, which that's fine too. I mean, I did enjoy watching them.
I'm gonna be candid and admit that I have seen neither, which I'm sure is abhorrent to listeners. But yes, sadly, I haven't seen either. So I guess I need to quickly brush up.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched all the nominations either, but those I actually went to see at a theater, so that's why they kind of, I remember them. There are other films that are, that were interesting, that were, again, smaller films. Not, but the title of one is, I think it was called American Fiction.
Is that right? Oh, yeah. Right. So, yeah.
Because
oh,
that's about writing. So yeah. I did really enjoy watching that one as well.
Very cool. Well, I definitely want to check out Perfect Days. I'm a big fan of Wim Wenders from way back. Of course, they make you watch Wim Wenders if you go to film school, which I didn't, but I was jealous and I took film courses as electives. And I love Wim Wenders' early stuff. But yeah, American Fiction looks amazing. And so that might be next on my list for sure. Iris, thank you so much for taking the time to do this again. Of course, we wish you the best of luck. I'd love to get your final thoughts on just keeping those writing dreams alive before we wrap here. And of course, I will point at Village in the Dark, the sequel, of course, to your very well-received Sitting Under One Roof, these claustrophobic, atmospheric novels of yours. But yeah, we look forward to the whatever comes next. So you have to come back and wrap with us again. But yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. For Village in the Dark, if you read City Under One Roof and you liked some of the side characters, I bring back a couple in a big way. And the suggestions for my next book is like, oh, how about bringing out the other characters? Because, you know, I do change my voices in each book. Each book has three points of view. And so other than the protagonist, I have two different points of view in the second book. So hope you'll pick that up. And I'm very excited about it coming out and the reactions that I've gotten so far.
Awesome. Yeah. Again, congrats. And just maybe your final thought to your fellow scribes, your final advice on just keeping the dream alive.
Yeah. Like as I've mentioned, I've done a lot of different media, and so I've talked before about pivoting your career. So for instance, in screenwriting, when I came across kind of a block of being pigeonholed in this sort of Asian historical space, which is unfortunately very hard to produce. You can try pivoting. And so I pivoted to books, and now I can write contemporary mysteries. And I've even, I've written a musical stage play that was a fantasy. So, it takes a lot of hard work and a little mindset change. But if you want your creative juices flowing, sometimes you can pivot and you can try a different media outlet.
Different mediums, definitely great advice. And again, we thank you for your time, your words, your wisdom. And we hope you come back in the future and tell us about all of your latest.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us for this file. And if you're a fan of the show, simply head over to writerfiles.fm for more. That's writerfiles.fm.